Len, we get back to our weekly podcast this week, coming off the PGA Tour's appearance in the Chicago area, last week's BMW Championship. And we sort of prepare for next week's Korn Ferry Championship coming to town at Chicago Highlands. But to start with the first WGA professional event, an exciting finish at Olympia Fields. The question is, who saw it?
Good question. I tell you, those two long putts at the end there, those were John Rahm getting the putt to win after Dustin Johnson made one to keep himself alive. I tell you, that was a great dramatic ending to that tournament. It was surprising to me, looking back at that event, why the scores were as high as they were. Now, I know the rough was up quite a bit. But over the years, it's not like Olympia Fields North has been known as one of America's toughest courses. So there, that was a big surprise. But I'm glad the tournament did end the way it did, with such a dramatic conclusion, with number one versus number two and these unbelievable putts. I mean, that's been. I'm trying to think of the last time I can remember a tournament ending with quite that big a bang, but that was good. It was good that there was a tournament out there that kind of resembled the U.S. Open with the scoring that it was that was there. And that tournament might wind up a good warm up for the U.S. Open, which this year, of course, is still to come. With all the tournament cancellations and postponements, we still have two majors left on the PGA Tour. So, that BMW was the real thing in the way of drama.
Len, I'll say this about Olympia Fields. First off, the rough was extremely deep. It looked even deeper in places than what we'd ever see at the U.S. Open. And who knows, maybe with the PGA of America agreement, if there still is one between Olympia Fields and the PGA of America, of course, that deal really hit a bump in the road with the changing of the schedule and the PGA Championship moving to May, and also the Club Pro Championship that needs two courses, and Olympia Fields would have been a perfect site for that event. Now takes place so early in the year, I don't think you could play it at Olympia Fields. And perhaps the Olympia Fields group is targeting a U.S. Open now, more so than a PGA Championship. And you have to believe that the message was sent when they saw how tough Olympia Fields could play. And of course, at this time of the year, the trees are in full form. They are fully developed. Some of those fairways looked a little tighter than I've seen them in the past. And that with high rough and speedy greens in August, instead of seeing them in June, like we did in 2003 for the U.S. Open won by Jim Furyk, you have to believe that that course really had its teeth out in full. And there's a lot of people that said, well, John Rahm may have sunk the winning putt, but the real winner was Olympia Fields. And there's people wondering if the USGA may have taken notice.
Well, I tell you, if they didn't, they got to be blind, because Olympia has a rich golf tradition. I mean, between having PGAs and U.S. Opens and all kinds of tournaments over its years, it's one of the most tournament-tested courses in the whole country. So it'll be interesting to see just where what impact this particular tournament has in what event could be coming to Olympia Fields down the road. Now, unfortunately, this year there would have been another pretty darn big tournament coming there, but the Fighting Illini Olympia Fields Invitational, that had to be called off. A big college event, one that's been growing and growing. Certainly not a PGA Tour caliber event, but it's good to have Olympia at least in the picture of a tournament host, because that tournament is, that course has been, the facility itself is ideal for tournament play. It's big. It's got two courses. There's a whole lot of events that could be held there. I think that the USGA is just one group that should be looking at it again and again.
Well, Olympia Fields, in addition, they also, They have a clubhouse that's big enough to handle major championships and plenty of parking around the clubhouse in the vicinity. And I think they could host a U.S. Open there again. I hope that here we are 17 years later, the sour grapes and the petty politics over who got stuck with a security bill from the Cook County Sheriff's Department, that should be long over the dam and should no longer be a roadblock in the USGA coming back to Olympia Fields. In addition, Len, speaking of the USGA, some rumors out there. They might be ready to pull up stakes from their current area, office, campus in the state of New Jersey, which for years was Far Hills. In recent years, now that the town finally got a post office, has been known as Liberty Corner. The talk is that the USGA might be considering moving their entire operation to Pinehurst, North Carolina, where they already do have a small remote satellite office, but they might be ready to take the whole operation there.
But that would be a good move. Any organization like golf would benefit from locating in Pinehurst. Pinehurst is the one golf area in the country. I'm not saying it's the only one, but it does things right. I've been there for tournaments. I've been there for travel stories. I've been there just to have a good time. Pinehurst is just a great golf atmosphere. It's a town that's grown a bit, too, actually, over the years. When I first started coming there, it was a little bit on the smaller side for a big organization like that to come in. But I hope, you know, I really do kind of hope the USGA moves there. Far Hills has been their home for a long time, but you know that's the climate isn't what it is in Pinehurst. If nothing else, I think a move of the USGA to Pinehurst would be well received and certainly benefit the organization as well.
In addition, you have the USGA Museum up on their campus in New Jersey, and I know for years the USGA has wanted to find ways to get more golfers to come there and visit it. And it's, I think it's just far enough away from all the great courses in New York and Long Island that people don't travel out there. And a lot of people who do go to Pinehurst have an appreciation for golf history. You know, one of the great historical moments that people are talking about now is the great U.S. Open victory there in 1999 by Payne Stewart, as the Payne Stewart course at Big Cedar Lodge in Ridgedale, Missouri, near Branson, is getting ready to come online in just a couple of weeks. And there's no Ryder Cup that week. That's been pushed back a year. But there's going to be a little mini Ryder-style duel between course designer Tiger Woods and his partner Justin Thomas, Team USA, taking on Team Europe and the brand new father, congratulations, Rory McIlroy, and his partner Justin Rose, representing, in essence, Team Europe.
You know, that's it's amazing how everything kind of fell together. That's as good an opening bang any course could possibly get, as to have a match like that. I'm interested in seeing, you know, that's an event with a format of an event like that. That's something that could be ongoing, not just a one-time big splash event. They've been playing, I've seen on TV more recently, the last really memorable course opening event was over at our friends in Harbor Shores. I saw a replay of the long putt that Jack Nicklaus made on the 10th hole after Johnny Miller told him that was an impossible putt. That alone carried that course opening. But I think this, I'm interested in seeing what this this international style four-player event will do at Payne's Valley. I think it'll be a great thing, great spectator event at a good time in the year.
Glenn, I remember Champions for Change. I was there, and matter of fact, right behind the hole on the flagstick and the cup up there, taking a look at Jack. I hit that putt right towards me and roll it in. One of the most amazing putts I've ever seen made in any type of a competition, tournament, special event, anything. Just absolutely amazing. I know I had a little fun with Jack Nicklaus in the press conference, and first thing, I remember starting my two-part question with Jack by saying, thank you for showing us mere amateurs on how to putt the 10th green, which kind of cracked up the whole room and Jack as well. But I know I got a great answer from him before he went on to discuss the challenges of rebuilding that entire area and turning it into the beautiful golf course that it is. And of course, Harbor Shores Resort celebrating its 10th year this year, and they have a four-part digital video series coming out about the history and the changes there, and in essence, the rebirth of Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Well, I tell you, the Harbor Shores has done just wonders for that area, not just because it brought championship golf there every other year with the senior tournament, but the that has just been a good drawing point, something that had it's an example of what a real well-run, good, with a good sponsor type of facility can do from golf, from the golf standpoint, to really help a community. And Harbor Shores is it's amazing that it's been 10 years already. I think time has just flown by. It's been a couple of years, I think, since I've been around there, but it really left its mark there. It's more than just a golf course. It's a symbol for what has become of the upgrades in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I think it's a great thing.
Glenn, one of the interesting things about Harbor Shores is not only the great restaurant there for the burgers that you drive past on the back nine, but they've got a little brewery now across the street that's starting to produce various beverages for Harbor Shores Resort. And, you know, Len, every once in a while you'd go to an outing and you'd find somebody out there playing some golf who doesn't play a lot of golf, and they would usually use the old joke, "I'm only here for the beer." But, you know, there's getting to be some truth in that statement, because it seems like more and more courses are starting to partner up and create their own beer. And I'll tell you what, the first place I noticed it was out at McWethy's Tavern at Mistwood Golf Club, McWethy's 100 beer. And they kind of created this beer, and it was really good. And shortly thereafterwards, along comes Coghill to promote what they had hoped. They were supposed to host the World Long Drive Championships this year, and unfortunately, due to COVID and some changes with the tour, that's not happening. But they had a great idea with this beer they created in conjunction with a local brewery near Coghill, and it's the Coghill Long Drive Pale Ale beer. And the can was very well done. Half of it is a drone picture of a shot from the air of Dubs Dread, course number 4 at Coghill, where so many championships have been played. But the other half of the can was the historic black and white picture of Joe Jemsek hitting the 501-yard drive at the World's Fair back in the day to sort of help promote the, at the time, planned long drive event. Now comes word yesterday from Aaron Hills in Northwest Milwaukee. And of course, in Wisconsin, there's plenty of breweries up there. But Aaron Hills has partnered with a local brewery, and they have now come out with their own Aaron Hills with their Clover logo on the can, Pilsner, which is now for sale as well. And instead of the beer just being on tap, I know at Mistwood 100 is now available in the can out on the beverage carts. At Mistwood, Coghill has got the Long Drive Pale Ale out at the halfway houses, and I'm sure that you'll be able to get the Aaron Hills beer in a can as well if you want to stop at one of the halfway houses that they have out on the golf course during your round. So it's amazing. It seems to be a new trend, and as more new golfers are getting involved in the game this year, especially with it being something people can do during the pandemic, clubs making their own beer or having somebody make a beer for them that they're putting their name on is a hot new trend. And the beers that I've tried so far have been good, and it seems like golfers are really enjoying them.
I was looking back on that a little bit, and I think the first time I heard of this promotional thing, which has been, you're right, it's been an amazing success. But the first time I heard of it was in relation to the Caddyshack movie. This year, I believe it's this year, or maybe it was 2019, was the 40th anniversary of that iconic movie. Probably the best golf movie ever made. It's certainly the most fun one to watch. They had a beer come out to promote that movie. It was far more low key thing than any of the courses have done. My thinking right now is still the best one is what Cock Hill did, but I don't think we've seen the last of it. That's been a very very effective promotional tool to have a beer made, and I think it's probably cost effective as well. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Len, last week we talked a little bit about the upcoming renovation at Settlers Hill that's going to be done by architect Greg Martin. And I have to tell you that we also talked about a couple of upcoming projects after that that Greg has on the drawing board, the Springbrook, Naperbrook projects at the Naperville Park District. But upon doing a little more research in the next week, what I didn't realize last week, and it's still a course that I haven't played. Maybe you've been there. But the Pottawatomie golf course, the nine-holer out there, I believe one of the more many years back, Robert Trent Jones courses, I think there was some history there regarding an island green that almost might be where the concept came into play. But also discovered that that is project, a redo there, is also on Greg Martin's drawing board, and wanted to give him full credit for yet another project that he has coming up in the next couple of years.
Pottawatomie, you know, that I know I played that, but it's been many, many, many years ago. I mean, that's a fixture in that community there, but being only a nine-hole course, it's nothing wrong with nine-hole courses, and that was the story, that it was may have had one of the very first island greens there. So I tell you, I don't know how Greg Martin handles all these courses. He must not sleep 24 hours a day sometimes, because he's got a load of them, but he does a great job. And I'm glad to hear he's going to do something with Pottawatomie. That's one of the older, more, even though it's a small, just a nine-hole course, it's one that does have a lot of history in Chicago, and it'll be great to see what Greg does with it.
Well, the other thing, Len, is I had a chance for the first time in, you know, maybe almost 10 years to go out and play golf over at White Pines in Bensenville. And I know Mistwood Golf is involved over there, and there'll be some discussions this fall between the Mistwood Golf team that's operating the golf side and the food and beverage side of the property right now for the Bensenville Park District. And they still have to come together in terms of a lease and some thoughts on future planning. But after taking a look at the East course, there are some very narrow holes over there, and I know that Mistwood architect Ray Hearn already has gotten his sights on that property. He'd like to get involved, but I can tell you this, White Pines East course is very narrow. It's gotten very overgrown with trees, and I hope that there's an extensive tree removal program coming there, because there's a lot you could do with that golf course just by getting some trees out, giving the fairways a little room to breathe, clean up some of the areas around the pond, and redoing the sand in the bunkers that really need some help. There's a few tee boxes out of commission that really don't have much any grass on them at all. But White Pines could be a great project coming up in the next few years for an architect, if the Park District can work with Mistwood and find the funds to go forward and make some improvements there.
Yeah, White Pines, I've got a kind of a warm spot in my heart for White Pines. My father's and brother's aluminum extrusion company was in Bensenville, and I did a lot of work there during my high school and college years, and spent a lot of time in Bensenville back then, and the Blackhawks also used to train in Bensenville, so it was always nice to go over and hit balls or play golf when the weather was good enough when you were over there working. But, you know, I remember back at White Pines that the clubhouse was in a different place. They had they used to hold the Chick Evans Amateur over there. And it was more of a tournament site. So I kind of feel, you know, the courses there, they do need some updating. But it is a 36-hole facility with a lot of potential. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over there. I think a lot of good things can happen to White Pines. I hope that the old dome a dome comes back there. I hope that tournaments come back there. It's always been a place with 36 holes. A lot of people can play there, But I think it's kind of untapped, and I think it's due for some work, and it'll and better days are ahead.
Len, what I found interesting this week, and you know what, I did a story this week following up on the month of July last month, or not last month, 2 months ago now, was the largest ever in amount of golf club sales. $388,600,000 in sales. Golf equipment in a month. It shattered the old records, 13 and 14 years old, by millions and millions of dollars, and a great economical boost for the equipment companies. But what we're also noticing is companies are now taking advantage of this, and the whole concept of saving all the new releases for the PGA show in January seems to be changing. We talked a couple weeks ago about Callaway just coming out with its new Big Bertha line of clubs that you can now go out and get fitted for. Titleist, in the meantime, has released some new golf balls in the last couple of weeks, and they came out with something interesting this week. They are doing online virtual fittings where you can actually get online and do a video conference and talk about what golf ball is best for you with a Titleist expert right online. So you don't have to go into the pro shop and try to track down your busy golf pro and ask him, hey, you know, what do you think I should be playing? Well, if the pro hasn't seen you and hasn't fitted you or been out on the course with you, it might be a difficult decision for him if he doesn't know your game. But you can sit down with a golf ball expert, analyze your game, talk about your handicap, what kind of clubs you're playing, what type of ball flight you're looking for, and get somebody who knows golf balls to talk to you about what kind of ball you should be teeing it up with.
You know, the pandemic is it's a horrible thing. It's been a really difficult thing. But for golf, it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been all bad. I had another example of that, that some of those equipment companies have certainly benefited. The courses, I think we've traveled quite a bit here, and the courses that we've been playing and seeing, not so much in Florida, but every place else, have been very busy. But I heard another piece this last week in a talk with one of our local players. Vince India is doing well on the Korn Ferry Tour and will be a factor in the upcoming event at Chicago Highlands. Vince used the three-month layoff period not so much to try to find places to play. He was in Chicago, but he spent a lot of time in the gym trying to heal a back that had been troubling him for a while. He made the best of his time there with the pandemic. Rather than playing tournaments, he was out there rehabbing himself. And I tell you, since he's come back on the Korn Ferry Tour, he's done very well. He's made the cut in 9 out of 10 tournaments, and he had his best finish in the last one with a tie for third. So that's just an example of all is not lost with the pandemic. Golf is in many ways, you know, you don't want to wish for something like that. But a lot of people in golf have taken advantage of the time to make the most of it.
Len, finally, in closing, this weekend is a special weekend, and I know there's so many great organizations with their hands out, hoping for some financial support and backing. But it is it's the Folds of Honor Patriot Weekend from the organization Folds of Honor, founded by Major Dan Rooney years ago. And there's a lot of clubs across the country participating, hoping that golfers can make a donation to Folds of Honor that supports our veterans who have given so much. Many of them have come back from places like the Middle East, and they may be have been shot. They may have been injured from various devices. I've seen veterans in recent years out enjoying the game of golf, finding that as a way to participate when they're missing part of an arm or part of a leg or something like that. And so this weekend, Folds of Honor Patriot Weekend. It used to be Patriot Golf Day, and it's expanded to not only today, but tomorrow, Sunday and Monday, you can make donations, and it's a big fundraiser for Folds of Honor. And
you know, that's one of the very best charities out there, but golf has always been such a great place to a lot of charitable causes. You know, this is just another one of them, but it's another one of the great things about golf that makes you happy to be involved in the sport itself.
One other thing, we can't talk about all of the great charity things in the sport of golf without talking about one of the biggest fundraisers right here in Chicago, and it's done by the Illinois PGA, River Forest Country Club in Elmhurst next week, the Illinois PGA Birdies for Charity, in which you can support the event or support your local pro.
That's always a great thing, a great event that they put on every year as well. But there's so many in golf, it makes you feel good about being involved in the sport because it's one that has always been helpful in all kinds of charitable causes.
With that, Len, we'll talk to you next week.